Today we talk about socialism, failures of centralized planning. If anyone wants to debate me or talk to me or express their points of view, connect with me on X at Burn the Vineyard. Let's get to it. When I think about socialism versus capitalism, I'm definitely not an expert in the subject, but the way I like to represent my opinion, my understanding, is via an analogy of a zoo. With socialism, you are an animal in the zoo. Let's pick a tiger. Why not? You're a tiger in a zoo. And you have a zookeeper. And while there are many possibilities here, let's imagine the best scenario. You are a tiger in the zoo. You are presented with a delicious, high-quality, grass-fed piece of beef 3 times a day. Or whenever you ask for one, really, and whenever and however much you'd like, you're presented with that, and it's great. You don't even know necessarily who the zookeeper is. The next level up is you've got a great zookeeper that you're friends with, and they're terrific, and they do everything well, and they're never sick, they never show up late, they're always there when you need them, and you've got a great relationship. You have absolutely, and you have a large pen too, and plenty of resources, food and water, plenty of places to run and play. You have all of your needs taken care of. That's wonderful. That's terrific. And if that could happen all of the time, you would have a great experience. But let's look at how much freedom and control this tiger actually has over their situation. If the zookeeper changes, or if they have a terrible zookeeper, or if the steaks arrive in less quantity or less frequency, or the meat changes to pork or chicken, or eventually just grain, or you know, the food degrades, the resources degrade, your pen is smaller, how much freedom and opportunity does that tiger have to actually change and improve their situation? This is how I think of socialism. You don't have a lot of say or control over who is ultimately controlling or serving you. Now, that's kind of, when I had mentioned initially, it was kind of an ideal form of socialism, where the state owns the means of production and everything is shared in an abundance and everybody's prosperous together. But it's untenable in the sense that it's unlikely to actually get there because of human nature. Potentially the zookeeper doesn't have any competition. Why should they work harder? Why should they exert more effort to serve you and please you and make sure you're comfortable? Okay, so let's leave that. I think I've made the point there. Let's leave that and look at how I would apply this scenario to capitalism. There's no zoo, so to speak. You are a tiger in the forest, and you are free to eat as much food as you would like if you can catch it. And guess what? If you are not a great hunter and you do not catch anything, you will starve. End of story. So, yes, you might starve to death, but also there's no zookeeper, so to speak. There's no cage, there's no pen. You are free to hunt and to roam and to live as you please without that sort of oversight. Now, some might say that sounds more like anarchism, which is fine. I mean, that's, like I said, I'm not a political theorist, but what I'm saying is in a free market capitalist society, which is like, I guess you could almost say it's like truly free market might be more like an anarcho-capitalism. But the point is, when I'm discussing socialism, the merits of socialism versus capitalism, to me this analogy helps. And if someone would like to debate this point with me, that would be, I would love that actually. And you can find me on X at Burn the Vineyard. And kind of what inspired me to do this podcast, it's first and foremost, I would say, a religious podcast with a political emphasis. And one of the things that inspired me to do this is I feel like there's a lack of fundamental understanding of the American dream and what we stand for in this American experiment. And part of this was inspired by this July 4th, this Independence Day, this past Independence Day. I listened to the Declaration of Independence as read by John F. Kennedy about maybe 10 different times throughout the day. I just hit it on repeat and I just listened to it and listened to it and listened to it. And it was a very profound experience, and it was a big wake-up call for me to realize, I think that there's a profound misunderstanding or misalignment of many things. And I hope to better understand everything in my world through doing this podcast and by researching and hopefully by debating ideas and policies specifically. So the reason I say this is like a religious podcast with a political emphasis is because I believe we are best served to be amoral, God-fearing people. And I believe applying religious principles in our politics, stopping short of separation of church and state via a state-endorsed or state-sponsored religion. But outside of that, I think without being a moral, God-fearing people built on a religious foundation, I'm not sure that we can experience, in fact, I personally am quite sure that we cannot experience the prosperity to any measurable degree that we have in the past. Without fundamental understandings of truth and principles. And I can debate that with anybody, but it would be more difficult because spiritual truths have to be known spiritually, and they can't be necessarily shared via a debate, however rigorous, Anyway, so that's the analogy I like to use with socialism versus capitalism, is imagine you're that animal in the zoo and you don't have control over your situation. It's great when everything's great, but when it's not, it surely puts you at a disadvantage. Whereas the opposite is you are free in the wild and you might starve to death if you don't adapt to your environment and learn how to hunt, etc., etc. So I guess my goal is to help people catch that vision and see that it does not serve them to outsource their decision making. It does not serve them to outsource your freedom to any other party. I listened to a podcast with Lex Fridman and Jeff Bezos a number of years ago, and I thought Jeff Bezos had a profound way of determining who on the decision tree of authority should be making the most important decisions. And the metric by which that is measured is how easily reversible is a decision. And the easiest reversible decisions ought to be made by lower management, and the most difficult to reverse decisions ought to be reserved for higher management. And in the context of capitalism versus socialism, getting rid of socialism once it's firmly rooted in place, if it's even attained functionally, it would seem history indicates that socialism often devolves to an oligarchy very quickly, as wherever power is concentrated, power is abused. That's my assertion. Where power is concentrated, power is abused. To me, the Declaration of Independence, as it reads and taken on its face value, indicates a response to a failure of central planning. No more, no less. If you imagine King George had, even if you ascribe the noblest and most generous motives to King George, that he wanted to see America thrive, he wanted to see the colonies thrive and do well. You've got all the injustices listed in the Declaration of Independence of making things difficult in the governance, being slow. A lot of it resolves, honestly, a lot of it revolves around inefficiencies, either being too slow to render a resolution to a complaint, or making things difficult for the colonies to colonial leadership to comply with, like, meetings or gatherings. Or, I mean, some of the things in there mentioned are, hey, setting up a meeting like a great distance away from where all the information required to do well in that meeting is kept. So be like the equivalent of me saying, you know, hey, in Washington, D.C., we have all this paperwork, and before the advent of the internet, obviously, and I say, as King George, I say, yes, we will convene your legislature in New York. And yes, it is up to you to get all the documents that you need from Washington, D.C. to New York for our meeting in 3 days, right? I mean, it's just unreasonable requests and no, you know, acknowledgement or willingness to resolve those. Keeping standing armies in their midst that kill people without redress or without repercussions or punishment. I mean, just overall lack of representation. I mean, it's all throughout the Declaration of Independence. And that's why I consider it to just be a failure of central planning. Because let's ascribe the most just and noble motives to King George. He wants the colonies to be successful. He wants the citizenry to be happy and whatever else. Let's just say that's the case. He's just bad at it, of necessity. It's 1775 or 4, whatever. I mean, it was signed in 76. But the events leading up to that, you're separated by an ocean. I mean, how hard is it to manage your chain of leadership? I mean, surely King George wouldn't have been in favor of the standing armies killing innocent civilians. And I'm sure personally, if he was there when it occurred, he would have been like, whoa, this is, you know, he would have learned the context and made a judgment there. But the point is, to me, it's a failure of central planning, first and foremost. So when people, what is socialism but actualized central planning? Or progressivism, trusting experts to make our decisions for us because they know more about it and they have more time to spend to learn about it and we trust their judgment? Like, well, who appoints those experts? Who appoints the leaders? Who establishes the authority? What metric and what authority is establishing the authority? I mean, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. It leads to a failure of central planning. Decentralized authority gets us closer to some measure of freedom. That's why it's great when things are turned back to the states. I wish the federal government, if the federal government had been culled or trimmed many, many years ago, the deficit definitely wouldn't be what it is today. If states are competing against each other in a measure, and some states have an incredible deficit and high taxes, whereas other states have a balanced budget and minimal taxes, like, they compete for people to live in that state. And that's the problem. It seems like socialism and socialist concepts of centralized planning are often used as a club to coerce an unwilling pocketbook or coerce an unwilling party to compliance. It's like a club or a that's swung unjustly, or unjustly rather. The thing is, when viewed from this context, ideas that seem good can be interpreted as not great. I mean, if you take like the minimum wage, for example, if you flip that around, the phrasing, and say it's actually a minimum payroll tax is what it is. It's with the payroll tax laws in place, it's really the government saying there's a minimum amount of tax that we want to take from employees. So we'll initiate a minimum wage. I mean, it's like, I don't know. I should get more organized before I just sit here and ramble. I just had a few notes to go over. But in general, the Declaration of Independence and the American Experiment proves, or has shown heretofore, it is unwise to outsource control. And wherever control is centralized, wherever power is centralized, power is abused. I mean, if we haven't learned anything in this story, that's what it is. On a spiritual level, more so, when the majority of the people choose immorality or choose to go against the laws of God, any society, no matter how it's structured, is going to fall into disarray, or at least experience many problems. So, let's see here. That's the other thing. Holding forth God as the pinnacle of our lives enables us to realize there is a higher power that is all-knowing and perfect, which is far better than an imperfect centralized planner in whom we might otherwise put our faith. To me, the American experiment returns power and God-granted rights to the individual. And that's the system of governments that must be protected via the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. But for me personally, it gets a little discouraging to see where we are today and to feel that a lot of those freedoms have already been taken away. I don't feel represented by the federal government. I don't really feel like there's anyone over there who represents my interests. And I also feel that all of the divisiveness and struggle and anger is all manufactured. Every single piece of it is manufactured to divide us, to make us angry, because anger is a very powerful emotion that evokes action. I think it's easier to manipulate an angry population. It just is. A peaceful population without any anger would not be motivated to take stupid mass action. Right? Or distracted, is not as easily distracted. So what I would encourage everybody to do when ingesting political discourse: ascribe to other people the most just and favorable motive to explain their actions. De-escalate. Recognize your emotion and de-escalate. Like, I saw something on Twitter where people were up in arms about the DNC erecting barricades and requiring IDs. First of all, from all attendees. First of all, I haven't even confirmed that. That could have just been a headline. I'm not sure if that's the case. So, point one in favor of de-escalation is, I don't even know if that's true. Point two in favor of de-escalation is, even if it's true, why do people say there's a huge contradiction there? Because the party you know, largely supports open borders and does not require IDs for voting, is in favor of not requiring IDs. It's very easy to look. There are many situations where you can compare contradictory stances in a body and use that to get angry. But just don't get angry. Why get angry about it? De-escalate. What are some things that could explain this? Well, first of all, whoever made the decision to put up barricades and require IDs to attend the event, they surely recognize the heightened security risk. And you could say, well, let's just say the decision was made by a handful of people to add the heightened security. And let's say it was made by someone whose main job is to provide security. That's the person we're making the enemy, really? I mean, who made the decision to put up barricades and IDs, which is require IDs, which is obviously a smart decision, especially amongst heightened tension and terrorist threats of terrorism? So are we making that one person the enemy and considering them representative of the entire party? Certainly that there's like a marketing thing where it's understood Democrats largely want open, unrestricted immigration. I mean, I think that's evident by, like, you know, trying to get rid of ICE and stuff. Sure. I'll give you that. Sure. But to just sit here and be angry about stuff is uninformed, unwise, unhelpful, and incorrect. Like I said, somebody who's responsible for security at this event made the wise decision, if it's even the case, to put up barricades and require IDs. That person, that one person, is not the enemy. That person might believe that they might be a Democrat, or they might be, I mean, good grief, the person in charge of their security might be a Republican. I don't know. But it's not as simple as just saying, hey, this is a contradiction, let's all get mad. It's like, no, don't get mad. Your first response to stuff should not be to get mad. I know that's boring. I know if it bleeds, it leads. People love to be angry about stuff, but it's not productive. It won't get you anywhere. And it plays into the hands of the forces that want us to be angry, that want us to be at each other's throats. Be slow to vilify and demonize people on the quote unquote other side. I believe there's a silent majority of rational people, and if you were to sit any two people down in a room, they'd likely agree on most points that you've been or we've been very upset about or very angry about. So even though it's an unpopular opinion, perchance, be slow to anger and choose wisely the entities at which you are angry. And don't be angry. It's silly to be angry at a single person, or really even a group for that matter, because the anger is manufactured, it's fake. It's not real. The anger might be real, but the cause for which we're stirred up to anger is not real. So your first reaction, if you actually want to effectualize a change, is to de-escalate and wait for more information. And likely in this age, more information will not come. Likely, somebody put a blurb out there, there's barricades and they're requiring ID at the DNC convention, and everyone gets mad, and then you never hear anything about it ever again. But people will talk about it. Oh, the Democrats, they want open borders and no voter ID, but they had barricades and required ID at the DNC. Like, yeah, your point? Like I said, I mean, if you're going to go along party lines, the person in charge of responsible for security could be like a security group that's full of Trump supporters, right? I mean, what if a Trump supporter designed the security for the DNC? Just, we don't know, and there's no point and there's no wisdom in just taking talking points and using them to be angry, and especially using them to inform and push your real decision based off of fluff, nothing substantive. So that's what I'd say. My political ethos moving through this year and through the election season, as boring as it is to make peace, be slow to judge, be slow to anger, and to the debate tool that I will utilize is the steel man. I'm not going to utilize the straw man or the red herring or the ad hominem attack. I'm only going to use steel man from here on out. That's my goal. Because I've been shut down with straw man and, well, effectively shut down with straw man, ad hominem attacks and red herrings, like I think we all have. So that's why, if I actually want to make a difference, I'm just going to use the steel man arguments like crazy. And once I see things from their perspective or can accurately represent their views, perhaps then we'll be at a state where we can find common ground and slowly effectualize some changes. So there you go. Socialism is a zoo. Capitalism is a free market capitalism. True capitalism is like a hunting in the forest, and you might starve to death, but you also might do really well. And the Declaration of Independence is a failure of central planning, in my opinion. Wherever power is concentrated, power is abused. Find me on Twitter, at X, at Burn the Vineyard. And let me know what you thought about this episode. And if there's anyone out there that wants to debate me on these points, I'm going to steel man the crap out of any point you make so that I can better understand you and we can be brought onto common ground. Let's debate ideas and policies and stop attacking people personally. It's not worth it. It's dumb. It's not wise. That's it.